This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neil Conan is on vacation. The future of detainees held at Guantanamo Bay is now in the hands of Congress. A recent Supreme Court ruling struck down the military tribunal system, which the Pentagon set up to try Guantanamo prisoners. The court said the Bush administration did not have the right to set up the tribunals without authorization from Congress. Today, the Senate Judiciary Committee began hearings into the issue, the first of a series of congressional hearings that will look into the legality of military commissions and the rights of hundreds of detainees in the Guantanamo prison camp. The president's allies in Congress, including Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, want to draft legislation that would allow the White House to use military commissions. Others on Capitol Hill want to clearly define the parameters of the administration's legal tactics in the war on terror and force the White House to comply with the Geneva Conventions. Earlier today, the administration issued a statement saying the Guantanamo prisoners are entitled to the protections of the Geneva Conventions. Later in the program, the federal deficit for dummies. If you have questions about the reported improvement in the U.S. deficit, why it's expected to go down, and what it means for the economy, you can email them in now. The address is talk@npr.org. But first, the right of detainees. If you have questions about how the Supreme Court's ruling may affect the prisoners at Guantanamo, give us a call. Do you think Congress needs to clarify U.S. policy on the rights of suspected terrorists held in American custody? Our number here in Washington, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And again, the email address is talk@npr.org. To start off, we are joined by Corinne Hegland, a staff correspondent for the National Journal. She's been covering this story, and she joins us now in Studio 3A here in Washington. Thanks so much for being with us, Corinne.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's begin with today's news. First of all, the White House statement, or the Pentagon statement, about the Guantanamo detainees, saying that they are protected by the Geneva Conventions. Now, White House spokesman Tony Snow said this is not a reversal of the administration's position. Maybe you could clarify the administration's position for us.
The Pentagon memo was, an incredibly carefully worded memo stating that the Supreme Court has determined that common Article 3 of the Geneva Conventions applies as a matter of law to the conflict with al-Qaeda. They don't say that they're reversing themselves. They don't say that it's a new policy. The Pentagon is simply stating that it is their understanding that, for the most part, existing DOD orders, policies, directives, execute orders, and doctrine already comply with common Article 3. So in other words, they're saying that they have been in compliance all along.
But presumably they've now issued this clarification, if that's what it is, in response to the Supreme Court decision.
It's a clarification of sorts, basically asking people to certify that, yes, indeed, they are in compliance with Geneva. The important thing here is that Geneva Common Article 3 prevents outrages upon personal dignity, in particular humiliating and degrading treatment. Now, the Pentagon's position is that they have already been treating prisoners humanely, and that the Detainee Treatment Act, the so-called McCain Torture Amendment last fall, similarly required them to treat prisoners humanely. And they're saying that their humane standard is more or less equivalent to Geneva, so this is a simple clarification.
All right, we'll get into a larger discussion of that later, but let's talk a little bit about the details of that Supreme Court ruling. It addresses the case of 10 detainees at Guantanamo, correct? But, of course, has broader implications. Maybe you can begin with the specifics and then broaden out the implications for us.
The specific case in front of the Supreme Court involved one man, Salim Hamdi, a Yemeni who has admitted to having been a chauffeur for Osama bin Laden and is accused of conspiracy to commit terrorism. Military commission charges were brought against him in 2002, and his military defense attorney almost immediately filed a claim within federal civilian courts asking for a judge to review the case. His attorney said that the commission by which Hamdan was going to be tried, having been set up executed by the president unilaterally, without consultation, without authorization from Congress, was unconstitutional. When the Supreme Court finally issued its ruling on that case at the end of June, the court essentially agreed with him. They said that the president, by establishing the military commissions without congressional authorization, stepping beyond the boundaries of the Uniform Code of Military Justice, which is the military's judicial system, had overstepped his authority and that if he wanted to have military commissions, he needed to return to Congress to do so. Now, this has reverberations across the rest of the detainees, because one of the reasons the court said he had overstepped his authority is that Geneva Common Article 3, which we were just discussing, also prohibits irregular courts, basically. Only regularly constituted courts can try people who fall under Geneva Common Article 3. As a result, the Pentagon ended up issuing the statement that we just discussed, saying Geneva Common Article 3 applied across the detainee system. In addition, there are hundreds of habeas cases pending in the lower courts waiting for an appeals court to make a decision about whether or not the habeas cases can go forward. Now, these don't involve people who will ever be tried before a military commission. These are enemy combatants who are being detained, who have asked for a federal judge to review the facts of their case and see if there's a reasonable basis for holding them. That decision has been on hold, waiting for the Supreme Court decision to act. Now that it has, judges can take a closer look at those cases.
Okay, so those move forward in the courts, but meanwhile, Congress has to deal with many of the issues dealing with the detainees as a result of the Supreme Court decision.
That's correct. The Supreme Court decision ended up throwing out, basically, many of the legal structures of the detention system. And so the administration has to go back to Congress, which it is in the process of doing, and Congress needs to come up with some sort of legislative something. Now, they could do nothing. The president already has the authority under his court's martial ability under the Uniform Code of Military Justice to try war criminals. So if Congress did nothing, that would be an avenue of proceeding.
They would be court-martialed.
They could be court-martialed. That is not an avenue the administration wants to pursue. They are very worried about, they say they're very worried about hearsay evidence, about disclosing classified evidence, and other procedural matters with the courts martial. So the administration would like Congress to take the existing military commissions and simply approve them, enact them legislatively as a whole. Some members of Congress are inclined to do that. Others are very concerned. Both Senator Graham and Senator Warner, Senator Warner being the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, have expressed their concerns about departing too far from the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And they've suggested a better approach might be to go back to UCMJ and take a look at specific procedures that are inapplicable or would be difficult with suspected terrorists and change those instead.
Now, you attended the Judiciary Committee hearing this morning, the beginning of the hearings on Capitol Hill. What was your sense, or could you get a sense of where they're going or what the thinking is coming out of that committee at any rate?
Senator Specter actually introduced a bill very shortly after the Hamdan decision, which begins to deal with the rights of both detainees who will not face military commissions and begins to codify the military commission system. As a whole from the committee, from both Democrats and Republicans, there was a sense of almost talking to a recalcitrant teenager. Welcome aboard. Isn't collaboration better? There was some frustration that the committee had wanted to enact legislation several years ago, and the administration said, no, we don't need you. So now that the administration is interested in working with Congress, they're eager to do so, but they wanted to get their frustrations known.
All right. Corinne, stay with us. I want to turn now to David Reams. He's lead counsel for 17 Yemenis held at Guantanamo Bay without charge. He's also a partner with the law firm Covington & Burling, and he's also with us here in Studio 3A. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Lynn.
First of all, let's start with that Supreme Court ruling and its implications for your clients.
The Supreme Court ruled that the president doesn't have unilateral authority to set up these commissions under the laws of the United States, that the Uniform Code of Military Justice was the extent of his authority, that Congress had told him what he could do and how he could do it, and he could not improvise further, especially with procedures that strayed so far from the norm. But in addition to that, of course, as Corinne says, the Supreme Court rejected the administration's position that the Geneva Conventions are inapplicable to alleged members of al-Qaeda. The administration had made an argument based on its interpretation of what constitutes an international conflict. The Supreme Court rejected that interpretation. And so now the fact is that even the men that I represent who are being held without charge as enemy combatants are entitled to the protections of common Article 3.
What do you make of the statement issued today by the Pentagon and the follow-up statement saying this is not a reversal of the administration's position?
The administration had never acknowledged that it was bound by the Geneva Conventions, but the administration had always taken the position that it was complying with the Geneva Conventions to the extent that it felt that it could, and that it shouldn't be criticized for junking the protections because even though it didn't feel it was bound, it was doing the right thing. And one can argue about that. I believe that's the basis for their statement today, that nothing's changing. I have to remind you that, I don't mean that disrespectfully at all, that this is an administration that says that it doesn't practice torture, but it's possible to say that only because it defines torture so narrowly that nothing's included. Here it says it's been complying with the Geneva Conventions, but what constitutes compliance is the whole question.
Well, does it help your case at all? I mean, can you?
Yes, it helps our case because the Common Article 3 prescribes treatment of prisoners that is inconsistent with the way the administration's been treating the prisoners. I am confident that it will have an impact on our challenge to the tribunals that were established to designate the men as enemy combatants. That's the whole issue in our litigation, whether or not the government can hold these men on the basis of the determinations of these jerry-rigged tribunals called combatant status review tribunals.
You have visited some of your clients at Guantanamo.
I have visited all of my clients. I've been there about half a dozen times. My associates have been there dozen times or more, and I've been with their families in Yemen.
All right. I'd like to talk to you a little bit more about how you feel they are being treated at Guantanamo when we return. We're talking about the future of the detainees at Guantanamo Bay, and we're taking your calls at 800-989-TALK or your emails at talk@npr.org. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. The Senate Judiciary Committee today took up the issue of detainee rights and how to try the suspects held at Guantanamo Bay. We're talking about the options for the Bush administration in the wake of the Supreme Court ruling that struck down the use of military tribunals. Later in the program, the federal deficit for dummies. If you have questions about the reported improvement in the U.S. deficit, why it's expected to go down, and what it means for the economy, you can email them in now. The address is talk@npr.org. Right now, detainee rights. Our guests are Corinne Hegland, staff correspondent for the National Journal, and David Reams. He's lead counsel for 17 detainees held at Guantanamo Bay. If you'd like to join the discussion, give us a call at 800-989-TALK. David Reams, just before the break, we were talking about the fact that you have visited your clients at Guantanamo Bay. The administration says that that the detainees are being are protected by the Geneva Conventions. What's your experience? What have you seen there? Do you feel that they are being treated under the terms of the Geneva Convention?
Well, I'd like to start out by going back to my point about it all depends on what being treated in compliance with the Geneva Conventions is. There's a notorious case of prisoner number 63, Al Qahtani. He was the subject of a Time magazine front page story several months ago. He is the prisoner who essentially fingered scores of other prisoners for the military after being subjected to the most sadistic and brutal treatment by the prison authorities. I don't even need to list them and recount them because you can imagine what they are. And the administration took the position that that complied with the Geneva Conventions. So this claim of compliance, I don't think, is entitled to much credibility. the most recent reports that I've received from colleagues of mine who've been recently down to Guantanamo is that especially since the three deaths last month of prisoners at Guantanamo, the treatment of prisoners has worsened. Their clothes have been taken away. They're kept in freezing cold conditions with music blaring, and they have consistently been subject to religious taunting and other forms of the Geneva Conventions would call degrading, abusive, and inhumane treatment.
Okay. Well, let's move on to this question of what Congress is going to do. David Reams, what do you think Congress should do? What's your idea?
My idea is that Congress has already done what it needed to do. It enacted the Uniform Code of Military Justice. That statute already gives the administration all the tools that it needs in order to try Guantanamo prisoners who were accused of crimes. The thing that the administration doesn't like about it is that the system is not designed to produce convictions. It's designed to produce correct results. When the administration was testifying this morning in Congress, it was talking about the need to be able to admit hearsay evidence, the need to be able to admit evidence that had been coerced from prisoners. They never say that they admit tortured evidence because they never admit that they torture, but they said today quite clearly, and Corinne was there, she can confirm this, that they still wanted to be able to do that. They don't want the prisoner to be able to see the evidence against him. They don't want any lawyers involved at the point of determining whether or not you can be detained forever as an enemy combatant. So the takeaway that I have is the administration wants to continue business as usual, but wants Congress to bless it at this point. And I think it's a very dangerous road for Congress to go down. Even if a new system was established that complied with the Geneva Conventions, it takes months, years, even decades to work out a system of rules for implementing a new system. This was proved in the case of the commissions that the administration set up 5 years ago. They were making the rules up as they went along. It's unavoidable. Why create a new system when you've already got a system that not only works, but is acknowledged to be in compliance with the Geneva Conventions? This statute authorizes military commissions, not just court-martials, but military commissions.
All right. Let's take a call. We're talking about the detainees at Guantanamo, what's next for them, and what Congress may do about it. If you'd like to join the discussion, the number is 800-989-TALK. And we're going to take a call from Tom. And I believe Tom is calling from California. Hi, Tom.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
I was wondering what the history and legal precedent of the euphemism enemy combatant is.
I think that enemy combatant is a term that's recognized under the Geneva Conventions. A Nazi captured on the battlefield would be an enemy combatant. The issue here is whether an enemy combatant is entitled to treatment as a prisoner of war or is simply entitled to the protections of this baseline provision called Common Article 3. But enemy combatant is essentially somebody who's viewed as having been fighting against the United States.
So this isn't something that Addington made up or anything?
He didn't make up the concept of enemy combatant. He made up the concept of unlawful enemy combatant.
Now, I got one more question. Now, wasn't the general that set up, and I'm not sure he's a general, but the gentleman who set up the prison or the interrogation process at Guantanamo Bay, didn't he then go to Abu Ghraib?
Yes, people normally think of Abu Ghraib as the center of all evil, but began in Guantanamo.
Yeah, wasn't he quoted as saying when he got there he was going to gitmoize Abu Ghraib?
I guess so.
I believe others were quoted. Go ahead, sorry.
Thanks a lot. I'll let somebody else get on. Thank
all
you
right.
very much.
Thanks for your call, Tom. Corrine?
Within Guantanamo, there were specific tactics were authorized by Secretary Rumsfeld for use on so-called recalcitrant prisoners. That included extended sleep deprivation. I believe it included loud music. I mean, there were specific tactics that could be part of an improved interrogation plan at Guantanamo. When personnel from Guantanamo began moving over to Iraq, some of those tactics that Rumsfeld had approved personally for specific plans began popping up on a much broader scale at Abu Ghraib. With or without authorization. There still appears to be a debate over that.
All right. I should say that we had been hoping to have a Republican congressman join our discussion. Apparently, he has had to go vote. We're seeing if perhaps he's going to be able to join us later or if we can find another congressman. In the meantime, Corinne, I'm wondering if you can perhaps lay out some of the parameters of the debate within Congress in the sense that David was just telling us that he doesn't think Congress should do anything. But it's likely Congress is going to do something, I would say, first of all.
It's very likely Congress is going to do something. There's sort of two extremes to this. Everybody says they are concerned with the fact that it's been 5 years and no trials have really gotten underway yet. I mean, they've been held up in courts and in challenges and figuring out the rules, and it's been a long time. And the entire original argument for the military commissions was that they would be fast. So, how to get trials underway that they would be fast? In David's opinion, and in the opinion of some of the judge advocate generals from the armed services and some members of Congress, the fastest way to do this may well be to use the existing Uniform Code of Military Justice. The president has all the authority he needs to do under the court's martial authority there. In the opinion of the administration, the fastest way to get this going would be for Congress to pass a bill that simply authorizes everything the administration had in those military commissions that the Supreme Court just struck down. The administration already knows what it wants to do with the military commissions. Congress can just, you know, sign its name on the bottom of those commissions and they can go. Realistically, probably something in the middle is going to end up happening.
How would you characterize that?
As Senator Graham put it today, and as Senator Warner has indicated he's leaning, although he wasn't quite as explicit as Senator Graham, the middle would be closer to David's side of affairs. It's going back to the Uniform Code of Military Justice and going point by point by point. And any procedure that is unworkable, as it would apply to a suspected terrorist, those senators want an explanation from the administration as to why it would be unworkable and a specific change. So it would be rooted in the Uniform Code of Military Justice, but with specific departures to address these circumstances. Their concern is that if they don't stick closely to UCMJ, and if they don't justify departures, these things are going to end up back in litigation and end up back in the courts again.
David?
Well, Corinne, I think that any new legislation is going to be brought back into the courts no matter what, because the Supreme Court found that the tribunals that exist are compliant with the that are authorized or compliant with the Geneva Conventions. For every deviation, the administration's going to have to justify it not just to Congress, but also to the courts. The background deep point, though, that I think Congress needs to consider and that I think that we all lose sight of is what the Geneva Conventions are. What were the circumstances in which they were adopted? People lose sight 60 years later of what the Nazi war machine had done, what Tojo's Japan had done in terms of torture. People don't appreciate that we've already been through this. We've been through it far worse than we are going through it today. And the Geneva Conventions were established in order to respond to situations that were not markedly different from the situation that we have today. The Nazi regime was viewed as the evildoer of all evildoers, the enemy of civilization. They hate our freedom. They hate our democracy. And I think that there's a little bit of a historical amnesia going on here in thinking, all right, the Supreme Court's thrown this out. Let's start again. We've already been there. We've already done it. Congress has already acted.
All right. Let's take a call now. We're going to go to Charles in Las Vegas. Charles, hello.
Yes, I'm not a Republican congressman, but it's your lucky day. I'm actually a Republican caller.
Good. Okay.
I wanted to ask your guest something. Let's talk about that historical amnesia that your guest just mentioned. I mean, do they not recall that the five German spies who landed on the shores of the U.S. in World War II were summarily shot and without any kind of a trial? I'm not suggesting we do that in Guantanamo, but I am saying I don't think putting panties on a detainee's head or using a barking dog in his face is the moral equivalence of Nazi Germany or Tojo's Japan.
That's not exactly what I was saying. First of all, with respect to the case that you mentioned, the Geneva Conventions were ratified afterward would have prohibited it, and the Supreme Court decision that upheld those executions is widely viewed as a mistake and a terrible decision. And in fact, the men who were executed did have tribunal proceedings. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that I'm not equating the United States military with any other power. I'm just saying that the procedures that were fashioned to deal with what we are facing today in the war on terror were designed with the same kinds of atrocities and the same kind of mad fanatical ideology that we face today. And the adoption of the Geneva Conventions was really viewed as a triumph of civilization and the rule of law, and a demonstration that we were not our enemies.
Are you aware that those prisoners are treated much better than prisoners in the United States?
That's what the administration says, but I've been down to the prison. I've talked to the men, which no one else has other than their own lawyers, and I can tell you that's a flat lie.
Don't you think that they're told to say that by the Al-Qaeda training manual?
Well, you can always assume that everything anybody says is a lie. I've seen them. I've seen their physical condition.
Have you talked to the guards who've had excrement thrown on them? Who speaks for those guards?
I understand that the guards have had excrement thrown at them, but I don't think that we have to get into the debate about who shot John, because if fair rules were in place in the first place, none of this would be happening.
Charles, I want to just say that we do not have a Republican congressman on the line, but we do have a Justice Department lawyer with another perspective, and we'd like to get to him. So thanks so much for your call. We're going to move on from here. And I just want to remind everyone that you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And with us now is Lee Casey, as I said, a Justice Department lawyer during the administration of Ronald Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush. He's also a partner with the law firm Baker & Hostetler, and he joins us by phone from his office in Washington. Thank you so much for joining us at very late notice, I know.
Thank you.
We are talking about what Congress may do with regard to the detainees at Guantanamo Bay. What's your sense of where Congress should go?
Well, you know, I think at this point, Congress should take the opportunity that the court's recent opinion in Hamdan created to write into the statute book a lot of the traditional rules on how we deal with unlawful enemy combatants, and in particular, what judicial process they are entitled to. They traditionally have not been entitled to the either a civilian level of judicial process or the judicial process provided to lawful combatants, prisoners of war, our own troops. But they're clearly entitled to some basic judicial process, and Congress can now articulate that in a clear and pretty definitive manner.
How divided are Republicans divided on this issue? And if so, how divided are they?
Well, I don't get the sense, certainly from what I've been observing, that Republicans are divided on the basic questions and the direction we should be going in. I mean, I don't think there's very much support, at least on the Republican side, for granting members of al-Qaeda the full rights of prisoners of war under the Geneva Conventions. I doubt, frankly, whether if put to it, there's a lot of support on the Democrat side for that. The real question is going to be how much process should they get and in what forum.
Well, why not just abide by the Uniform Code of Military Justice as the standard practice, as we've heard David Reams arguing for here?
Well, there's a couple reasons. And you know, frankly, beginning, I mean, you can always begin with the UCMJ and see where you have to make distinctions. I mean, I think there is an important principled and symbolic reason, which is the UCMJ was designed for individuals who, while accused of crimes, do play by the rules. They are lawful combatants. They follow the basic rules of war, and that's something that we are trying to encourage, or should be trying to encourage. And so it's important not to treat people who refuse to abide by those rules in the same manner. In addition, there are certain practical issues, most important of which is the, I guess what you call the intelligence security issue. Regular courts martialed are organized by and large with the assumption that the proceedings can be in public without much problem. The evidence usually, not never, but usually doesn't involve highly classified information. You know, did somebody rape somebody else on Okinawa, for example, doesn't involve highly classified information. The trials of Al-Qaeda members of unlawful enemy combatants in the war on terror do, or at least there is a much higher probability that they do. And the rules for the bodies in which they are tried need to reflect that.
But the rules, Corrine, go ahead.
The rules for courts martials, as people are explaining them to me at any rate, do allow for the presentation of classified information. They do actually allow for the closing of the courtroom. What happens is prosecutors have a small session with the judge, talk about the classified information, and then they agree on what form to present the information in.
Okay. Corrine, we'll continue our discussion about detainees at Guantanamo and their future after we take a short break. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Here are the headlines from some of the other stories we're following today here at NPR News. In India, 7 bombs exploded on Mumbai's commuter rail network during rush hour Tuesday evening. At least 147 people were killed and hundreds wounded in what authorities call a well-coordinated terrorist attack. And the federal government has announced that it will pay $4.2 billion into a program to help Louisiana residents rebuild or sell houses severely damaged by Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. $1 billion will also be set aside for hurricane-related housing needs in several other Gulf states. You can hear details of those stories and much more later today on All Things Considered from NPR News. Tomorrow on Talk of the Nation, in several recent terror cases, suspects have been arrested before they appear to have the necessary financing, weapons, or knowledge to carry out a plan. Some say these cases represent a needed shift in anti-terror policies to disrupt plots that go too far. Others worry the government is going too far. The debate over preemptive arrests, plus our regular Wednesday fix of the political junkie. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. Right now we are continuing our discussion about the future of detainees, what Congress may do about it. My guests are Lee Casey. He served in the Justice Department under Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush. And we're also joined by Corrine Hegland, a correspondent for the National Journal, and David Reams, lead counsel for 17 Yemenis who are being held at Guantanamo Bay. And we're going to try and get a call in now. We're going to go first to Drew in Wichita, Kansas. Hi, Drew. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. I have what I think maybe just a couple of simple questions. The first is, does Hamdi only apply to detainees at Guantanamo, or will it apply to detainees now that they're looking at building new facilities in secret locations?
Well, the finding about Article 3, common Article 3 of the Geneva Conventions, is that it applies to all of the Al-Qaeda suspects. So it's going to apply wherever the United States holds them, and it may call into question whether we can have secret sites such as has been maintained by the CIA.
Okay. The other question then is, all of the things that are going on in Congress today, is this going to amount to nothing if, when at the end of the day, Congress does all of its things, turns it over to the administration, and the president just simply uses one of the notorious presidential signing statements to say, that's nice, but I'm going to do what I want?
I was thinking of that this morning as I listened to the administration witnesses. The administration may get as much as it can out of Congress, and then in a signing statement, the president will say, I can go further.
Well, the administration says that its signing statements are intended to be simple reservations of the president's authority, and that actually there's nothing, while they use more signing statements than previous presidents have done, you know, there's nothing particularly new about saying I will interpret this in keeping with my authority as commander-in-chief. How accurate that is still up for debate in some ways.
Lee Casey, do you have a sense of what the president really wants here, what the president wants Congress to do?
Well, I think first and foremost, the administration would like a little certainty. I think they would like to see something very similar to the military commission rules that were very painstakingly hammered out by the Pentagon over the last years. Obviously, I think everyone understands there's going to be changes. There were some issues that the court, or at least justices, raised that with which they're uncomfortable, which it would obviously behoove Congress to take into account as it goes forward. Obviously, they want to be able to try and punish these people in a meaningful way without compromising secured information or compromising our ability to continue fighting the war.
Okay, thanks. And Corinne, just a last question. I mean, how difficult is it going to be to get substantive legislation on this?
I think that's the multi-million-dollar question. There are a lot of people wondering right now. Best estimates are that you won't begin to see legislation until this fall. Okay. There'll be a lot of discussion first.
Corinne Hegland, a staff correspondent for the National Journal, thanks so much for being with us today. And David Reams, lead counsel for 17 Yemenis held at Guantanamo Bay, also thanks to you for joining us.
Thank you, Penny.
And Lee Casey, thanks so much for filling in for us at such a short notice. Appreciate it.
Anytime.
Lee Casey served in the Justice Department under Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush.